This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number two. Glad you could be with us here on a Friday. More from the NBA playoffs. As last night, Milwaukee got a 104-89 victory over Brooklyn, evening up that series, and then two game sixes tonight. Wimbledon will be starting in just a few weeks, not that long from now. And Naomi Osaka has pulled out of the Wimbledon Championship. She's citing the Tokyo Olympics and a chance to play in front of our hometown fans over there. But the reality of it is it goes back to the reason she pulled out of the French Open, which is she doesn't like talking to the media. And she doesn't want to talk to the media. And she's citing personal time. This is getting really, really bizarre. And I'm not really sure exactly where this is heading. One of the things that sports has traditionally done is allowed athletes to sort of be talked to and questioned and have their stories being told by members of the world media. I know the world has changed. Absolutely. I know now there is other options for them to do that. There is social media platforms. Heck, the Players Tribune is a whole website dedicated to athletes writing their own narrative and writing their own stories. But this is now the second Grand Slam tournament she's pulled out of. Now, she hasn't given the official reason, but it was because of post-match news conferences at Roland Garros. I don't think she was going to get a break at Wimbledon, but she's pulled out yet again. I don't know, again, what this means. There's always going to be the debate about whether or not athletes should be required to talk to the media, who can twist anything that they say and make it into anything that they want, and I can understand the frustration. But at the same time, it is a venue in which most people get their news and information. Most people don't go to Instagram pages to get filtered news and information on what an athlete may or may have been thinking at a particular time in a game. But you can get that in post-news conferences where questions are directed as to what happened there, what happened here, why was this done here, why was this done there. Naomi Osaka, this may not seem like a big story, but in the large part of it is, if 5 years from now, there's just a massive athlete boycott of media and talking to the media, we might remember 2021 when it all started to kick up, where athletes were willing to skip out major important moments in their career not to do this. All right, when we come back, the good, the bad, and the dumb as we roll along, Friday edition of the Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb. We're going to send you to the weekend right. And you know what? Since I'm going on vacation, this is going to be the last for a while. So I definitely want to feel good about good, the bad, and the dumb.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll be honest with you. This might be the last the good, the bad, and the dumb for a while.
Yeah, right.
Because you know, it doesn't really work without you. So I don't really introduce it.
Well, thank
when
you.
When you're not here with us. So
yeah, I feel like you'd be cheating on somebody else if you did good, the bad, and the dumb.
Well,
with
I'd feel
else.
Like I'd be cheating on you. And
right, yeah.
Last thing I want, I don't want to be cheating on you.
Listen to the love fest on this show. What's the good of the day?
People might have just turned us off.
That's I know, right? That's all right.
You know what? You remember, I think it was 2 years. Well, it definitely wasn't last year. Probably the year before that, how hyped we were over the Tony the Tiger Bowl.
Oh, that's right. It was our thing. The logo was fantastic. And
yep.
It was amazing.
It had nothing to do with the name Tony. I know a fact.
Just Frosted Flakes in general.
Well, I got another bowl that we might be able to get into.
Okay.
It's called the L.A. Bowl.
Like
Los Angeles? Los Angeles Bowl, yes.
Okay.
It'll be one of the early bowls of the game. But the reason why I'm bringing this up is because they have a unique sponsor.
Oh, give it to me.
Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, not bad. How did this come about? How is he involved in this?
He literally paid the sponsorship fee for the bowl. So
you got to be kidding.
It's going to be known as the Jimmy Kimmel L.A. Bowl.
All right. Now, do you think Jimmy Kimmel's paying for this or the people behind whatever he wants to promote
maybe,
are paying for this?
You know, maybe that's it.
Yeah.
You know.
But it doesn't matter,
maybe
right?
Maybe it's the Jimmy Kimmel show that's paying for it. I don't know. But it doesn't matter. It's going to be known as the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl. Jimmy Kimmel is excited, took to social media and was like, yeah, my name's going to be up there with Orange and Fiesta and Rose.
This is a little weird. Like, okay, I think you and I had a discussion on this a long time ago where we were saying that at some point you have to, and I don't think it was a bowl. I think it was something else where you have to say, look, you can't have like strip clubs and pornographic magazines sponsoring thing. Like, there's somebody that has to come in and go, hey, we're not taking money from X company or X business, right?
You can't have Pornhub Bowl.
Right, exactly. Like, we appreciate this pornographic site sponsor, but we can't take money for it. Like, where does the line draw with something like this? Where that sounds silly. Like, yeah, that, but doesn't
this,
it?
Does this open Pandora's box a little bit?
It might.
Because now, I mean, why wouldn't you, if you have the means, if you have the funds, why wouldn't you want to name a bowl after yourself?
I think you're right. And eventually, like, money talks, I get it, don't get me wrong. But sometimes as whatever business you're in, you just go, we can't do that. Like, hey, I've told this story many times when I did remotes at a strip club in Colorado Springs when we were like the beer guys, you know, sort of edgy sports talk show. But then once we had a new management team come in and they changed the image of the entire station, those were over. Like, we didn't take their money anymore. The money was real, but they stopped taking the money because it ruined the image that they were trying to create. We just went in an entirely new direction. It was where we were going. We were no longer shock jockey because we had some shock jock shows on the network. Yeah. And I was doing a show and, you know, we were doing crazy stunts. But then a guy came in, he stripped it all down, said, nope, it's going to be sports only. We're carrying games. We're going to have a business relationship with the sports entities. So we have to get rid of all this stuff. And we did. We didn't take their money anymore. It's the same kind of thing, right? With don't you think with these bowls where they go, look, Jimmy Kimmel's fine, but no, I'm not going to be taking in the name your celebrity that's controversial bowl, right?
Yes.
Like, whatever. Like, it can't just be anybody that just says, I got money, fine. I'm going to buy the bowl.
You'll take
my money because you're begging for it, and I want this to be my bowl.
That's what I mean. You know, if you have the funds, if you have the means, I mean, could we get the Jeff Bezos bowl soon?
Sure,
the
right?
Elon Musk bowl?
Sure, right? Why wouldn't you?
I mean, why wouldn't that happen?
Yeah.
On the positive side, though, it is an enticing matchup. It's the number one team out of the Mountain West Conference going up against the number five team out of the Big 12.
Wow. Actually, so, that is very good.
That's an interesting matchup.
Okay, if you had told me that they got, like, the barely eligible team out of the Mountain West and the barely eligible team out of the Big 12, I would have said, fine, you got to start somewhere, right? You got to start somewhere. The top team in the Mountain West.
Not the Big 12, Pac-12.
Pac-12. Oh, that's that's awesome.
Yeah.
Because the number five team in the Pac-12 might be decent. May not, but might be decent.
No, I mean, it should be.
But
it's a competitive game if you think
about
it. You
know what? That's great. I'm for it. I'm for the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl.
The Jimmy Kimmel Bowl. And it's one of the first ones to come out of the gate. So
that's awesome.
It's like mid-December bowl games.
Yeah.
You know, where it's the only thing on.
You know what remember we talked about what you get a billionaire? Get him this.
Yeah, get him that.
Right?
It doesn't cost. I mean, they're saying they don't know how much Jimmy Kimmel paid for it. But bowl game sponsorship is estimated to cost between $300,000 to multi-millions, obviously, for the New York Six Bowls.
Wow.
So, I mean, maybe this is a nothing bowl. It's a throwaway bowl. Maybe it's only costing him $300,000 to throw his name up there.
God bless.
It's not a bad Father's Day gift.
No, that isn't. That isn't. All right, what's the bad of the day?
I actually have two. And one of them is a little heartbreaking, so I'll save that one for a second.
Okay.
But the first one is, this is the way that I wrote it down. No one ever wants a sequel to a bad movie, right?
Right.
Well, we're staring down the barrel to one of those sequels.
Which is?
The first murder hornet of 2021 has been found in the U.S.
Really?
Yeah.
It took a while, though.
It took a while, but the murder hornets are back.
Man, I kind of forgot about the murder hornets.
I thought that was such a 2020 thing.
Me too. And then I kind of forgot about them, and I was like, whatever.
A lady up in Washington discovered one, and now, you know, everyone in up the... Why is it Washington, by the way? Is it because Washington, maybe it's a little closer to Japan?
Is it where they got
the
into the country, though? Is that...
I don't know.
Somehow they got into the country through...
Did they cross over through Canada?
That's what I remember. I remember they were initially spotted in Washington because maybe they came over through
a shipping container.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, maybe. You know what? I mean, maybe it's the first one. See, I don't think they ever left.
No. They just haven't been in the news.
Yeah, we just haven't seen them. They're out in the field somewhere.
They're
out
waiting
the woods.
To attack. They're biding their time.
They're just gathering their forces. Right. This one was a rogue that, you know, thought maybe he could get away and, you know, start his own colony, but got caught.
Yep.
So yeah. And the rest of them are like, see, that's why you guys all hold back.
Stay here.
Stay in the trees. Don't
now
worry.
Now they're aware. Now that they've alerted to our presence.
Yeah.
He jumped out of light speed too quickly.
We haven't amassed our numbers enough yet.
Right. Exactly. All right, what's the second bad?
The second bad, this is kind of heartbreaking, all right? Raiders wide receiver Henry Ruggs, the third, you know, you've heard of him.
Yeah.
He was literally one pin away from bowling a perfect game.
Oh, no, and he didn't get it?
He finished with 299. 11 frames in, all strikes. On the 12th frame, throws it, one pin remains standing.
Man,
I mean, because, you know, obviously he's not a professional bowler. I mean, if you're a professional bowler, I probably wouldn't even be talking about it. They probably have bowled 299s, you know, every day. But this is some. I mean, he was just, I think he was out with just a bunch of his friends. They were having a good time. Friends started videotaping when he got to the 10th frame. 10th frame, strike. 11th frame, strike. Hype is real. 12th frame, the ball let go. He looked good. One pin.
Oh, that's terrible. I'd throw it in the gutter. I'd be under so much pressure, I'd probably gutter ball it.
I mean, he said he was devastated.
Oh, that's got to be... Listen, I don't know how many people do you know in your life, like with golf, for example, are like, I never made a hole-in-one, but I landed one time it landed within 2 inches, right? There's a bunch of people that have those stories. And what makes those hard is you just don't know... like. I remember that happened to me many years ago. I had a shot on a par three. It landed 2 inches from the hole, like just a little pump tapping. And I thought to myself, I may never hit a shot like this ever again in my life, ever. And like, this was my moment. I needed one more rotation of the ball, just one more rotation, and it would have gone in and I would have gotten the hole in one. Maybe this is the same for him. Like, I'm never going to even come close to doing what I did. I don't have that level of talent to do this again. And the one time I do it, I come one pin short.
I mean, can you imagine?
Oh,
one pin. It literally on the final roll. And it, you know, just that one pin is standing there. And it, you know, score red, 299. It was nothing you could do about it.
Oh, that's terrible.
And that's terrible. For him, too, maybe he just, you know, maybe he released the ball like a little too soon or didn't put enough spin on it. Just enough spin. I don't know.
Maybe there wasn't just enough oil on the lane.
Yeah.
The ball just sort of, maybe just, or maybe, wasn't enough oil and it just hung and got a little bit of friction that was just enough.
Or maybe the bowling alley put a little too much spider tack underneath that one pin and it just stuck there.
That's terrible.
But yeah.
That's terrible.
Heartbreaking.
All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Well, you knew it was going to happen. Logan Paul, after coming off his fight with Floyd Mayweather, has found his new challenger, or has called out his new challenger.
Who is?
Mike Tyson.
Oh, he did not, did he?
He wants to fight Mike Tyson.
I wouldn't fight Mike Tyson at 100 years old.
No.
All right, letting people know.
His reasoning is that he went 8 rounds with the champ. And Mike Tyson is old.
Yeah, okay. Still, I don't know about that.
Here's the thing. I want this fight to happen, and I want there to be no rules.
I agree completely. Don't we all want that?
I want there to be knockouts. You know, and if Logan Paul, God bless him, if he's able to knock out Mike Tyson, fine. But I want it to be like a legit fight where Mike Tyson is, because he looked pretty good against Roy Jones Jr. And I think he still has it.
I do too. And I think when you're a boxer, even though, you know, you may not fight again, I think there's some things you still do. You're not going to be in perfect shape like you were when you were 21, but I don't think you let yourself turn into Buster Douglas.
What was the one thing we kept talking about in the first hour? Muscle memory.
Right.
You know, with golfers, you know, they shouldn't be complaining about phones. You got muscle memory. You've been hitting this ball the same way for the last 20, 30 years. Mike Tyson still has all that muscle memory from all those years of boxing.
I agree.
So although this is a really stupid idea, this will be the one boxing match I might actually pay for.
I think I might too. I like Tyson.
I do too.
I've always liked him.
But
I know he's had a lot of problems, and I know the arrest, and I understand that. But I've always been a Tyson
but
fan.
Only if there could be knockouts.
Yep, I agree.
And you
That's
know,
it.
You can just and you tell Mike Tyson, hey, Mike, you do it. Just go for it.
That's awesome. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Coming up, we'll talk some more U.S. Open as we continue along from Torrey Pines with Brian Wacker of Golf Digest. We'll talk to him about what's going on after round number one as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, when you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to your curbside, or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Two game sixes tonight. Atlanta hosting Philadelphia, up 3-2. Hawks can close out that series and get rid of the number one seed in the East. Clippers hosting the Utah Jazz in the West. They are up 3-2, and they can get rid of the number one seed in the West. And the winner of that game gets Phoenix, and the winner of this Philadelphia series gets either the very tired Brooklyn Nets or the I don't really know what we're doing Milwaukee Bucks. I said yet last hour I thought last night's game was dull. I really did. I don't know why I thought it was dull. It was Milwaukee leading wire to wire, but I thought it was boring.
It was.
I just thought it was boring.
You know what it was? What was missing was the playoff hype.
I completely. I mean, again, the crowd was in a way to get it, but it didn't feel like it was a playoff game from the players.
Yeah.
Like, I swear Milwaukee acted like they were up 3-0. Brooklyn. Brooklyn acted like they were up 3-0. I mean, there was not the same feeling. Okay. They were tied at 2. They went to game 5. Game 5, what made game 5 great was there was a sense of urgency by Brooklyn, right? Because what happened to Kyrie Irving being out in game 4, and then, you know, James Harden, is he playing? Is he not playing? And then he was playing. And then Kevin Durant basically sealing his legacy by having this tremendous game where he carried the team in a comeback victory that was one for the ages. I mean, I really do hope we remember it. If Brooklyn is eliminated, we might not. But it's still one of the best postseason games we've ever seen from a player individually. It's on that level. And it was because Brooklyn needed to get the series back in their hands, right? They couldn't let Milwaukee win that game in Brooklyn. They were shorthanded. They were going to be shorthanded the rest of the way. They needed to get that win at home to get at least something going so that they can go into game 6 in Milwaukee with a little bit more feeling like they were going to win this series than if they had lost. And yet they didn't act like that last night. They did not play with the same level of, hey, why don't we do ourselves a favor and wrap this thing up right now? They didn't do that. They didn't. They never really challenged Milwaukee. They never were in the game. I was occupied with something else, and I was looking up, and I'm not seeing any movement. Like, I never saw Brooklyn really make a charge in this game. I never saw Brooklyn make this interesting or close or what. I mean, again, there was a steady lead that Milwaukee had that stayed throughout the whole game.
There wasn't a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
And that's what was lacking from this game, is that at any moment you can feel like, okay, either team will win it because it'll happen.
Yeah.
It's not that somebody's trying to win this game. I didn't feel like Milwaukee was trying to stay relevant in this series.
Yeah,
and the win was like they were like, you know, the benefactors of, well, someone had to win,
right? And this was like, if you look at the statistics in the, you know, if you just kind of go through the box score, yeah, I mean, they both shot about the same, and they both were, you know, Milwaukee struggled from the 3-point line, but it didn't really affect them. They both had about equal number of turnovers. But it wasn't that close. As close as the statistics indicate. There was a steady lead for Milwaukee that they got early in this game that they never really relinquished. It never got down to 1 or, you know, just here we are. We're up by 7, up by 8, up by 9, up by 10, up by 8, up by 7, up by 10 again, up by 9 again, up by 7, up by 9 again. Like, that's just the way it was the whole game.
Well, I'm going to flip it a little bit. Do you think it had anything to do with the fact that we've kind of gotten spoiled with one team being up and the other team making a comeback?
Maybe that's it. Yeah, because we've been seeing that a lot.
Because we've been seeing that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, one team is up, I don't know, say 26 points.
Yeah. But, again, I talked about this with the Atlanta Hawks Philadelphia game, what, Wednesday night, where they're up by 26 and you go do something else, right? Like you go, like I was talking to my wife, I was flipping through channels, you know, whatever. And the reality of it is it wasn't until I started to see that Atlanta was back in the game within a reasonable amount to make me go, oh, we might have a game. And that's when I came back to it. This game I had on the whole time, and I just went, I never was engaged. Game
True.
5 of this series, I was engaged. I was engaged because Brooklyn, there were two things that were interesting to me in the game on Wednesday night in Brooklyn. The first thing was Durant, right, who started off kind of slow, but then was really picking up steam. And in the fourth quarter, he was really on fire. And there was a sense Milwaukee was coming back in that game. There was a feeling like Milwaukee was controlling that game and getting back into that game. I didn't see that for one second in that game last night, that Brooklyn was like, nah. And a lot of it has to do with the fact was that game 5 was emotionally draining, and these guys are human. I mean, that was a Herculean effort by Brooklyn to win game 5. They needed every bit of Durant's 49 points. They needed every bit of his 17 rebounds, and they needed every bit of his 10 assists. They needed other guys to come off the bench or play role and play better. Harden was more of a distraction than he was a effective person. I mean, again, draw a PJ Tucker defense, which is probably what you wanted him to do anyway. Didn't really need him to score. But even when he played a little better in game 6, there was no feeling of getting back in that game. And I will tell you tonight, I think tonight, I don't think Atlanta is going to do that in their game 6 up 3-2. I think Atlanta is going to stick it to Philadelphia as soon as they can and drive it down their throat as soon as they can. I don't think they're resting on their laurels because they don't want to go to Philly for game 7. I wouldn't take my luck with that a second time. So I think you're going to see Atlanta try to pour this one on and get this thing wrapped up. And I think Utah will probably come out firing, but I think the Clippers win that series. I think the Clippers win tonight. But, man, I like game 7s. I want more game 7s. Because you know what I don't like? I don't like 4-game sweeps, and I already have one in the second round. And I didn't like that. So I want game 7s. I'm glad we're at least having one of them.
Yeah.
But we might have two. We'll see.
I can see it.
Here's
my prediction. I think the Hawks beat the Sixers because I think the Sixers are just a shell of who we think they can be.
I know.
But
we said this the other day. Ben Simmons is terrible. God.
Did
He's
you see what
terrible.
They were doing in Philly? Someone put up missing photos.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it just literally said, have you seen him, Ben Simmons? And then shows a little stat line from game 5. It's God.
I remember rallying about this, you know, a couple years ago. I remember being, it was LSU's final home game. And there were signs, people were bringing signs in Baton Rouge, big signs, thank you, Ben Simmons. And I remember that was a team that didn't go to the NCAA tournament. I don't think they even went to the NIT. I think they pulled out of the NIT. And I remember thinking, for what? What are you thanking him for? Like, what are you thanking him for? You didn't win a chance. You not only didn't win a championship, you didn't even come close. Like, he's one of the best players. He's going to go number 1 in the draft. He didn't do anything while he was at LSU. He didn't help them win. He didn't help them win the SEC. He didn't help them win the SEC championship. And now in Philadelphia, he's number 1 pick. Here's his opportunity with the number one seed, to be a factor in the postseason. And he is nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. Brian Wacker, Golf Digest, going to join us. What happened in round 1 of the U.S. Open? And what about Phil? Could he come back? What about the course? We'll talk all about that coming up next as Wake Up Talk Call continues.
You're listening
listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along with Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio. Waiting on Brian Wacker of the Golf Digest to join us. We'll talk about the U.S. Open. Russell Henley is the clubhouse leader at 4-under par, but Louis Oosthuizen is also 4-under, but he has 2 holes left as it was suspended yesterday due to darkness and fog. Brooks Koepka had a very good round, 2-under par for him. Xander Schauffele, who people like coming into this tournament, he is at 2-under. Phil Mickelson, he's at 4-over, shooting a 75. Jordan Spieth also did not have a very good day, although dealing with a foot issue. The U.S. Open is, you know, it's a tough venue, so you're not technically out of it if you're 3-over, 4-over. You just got a little work to do to get back into the field, but this is a tournament that likes to keep it around even par, 2 or 3 under. That's about it. It's supposed to get tougher as the tournament goes along. You're not supposed to run away with it, you know, which is why when Tiger won at Pebble Beach and won by 15 shots, it was very, very impressive because you don't do that to U.S. Open golf courses. But nevertheless, that's where we stand. Rory McIlroy finished at 1-under par. That was a good round for him. Matthew Wolff, who's taken some personal time, has been out of the field, didn't play in the last major. He is at 1-under par after round number one as well. So, again, this is a large field. You've got a large international contingent coming into the U.S. Open. You've got amateurs. You've got people who've qualified. And, of course, you've got every professional that has been able to get into this field. So there's a lot of players in 156 are in the U.S. Open. So you can see why it was a little bit more towards the end of the night yesterday. Brian Wacker, Golf Digest, joining us here on a Progressive guest line. Progressive quote, buy and sell of car insurance only at progressive.com. Brian, yesterday, the round one of the U.S. Open, when you evaluate the course in terms of difficulty, how did you rate Torrey Pines yesterday?
Well, certainly not the toughest U.S. Open venue that we've seen in recent years, and I think some of that, of course, due to the, you know, the conditions in the morning. Obviously, had a 90-minute fog delay, and the course was playing, you know, a little soft in the morning because of all the moisture dampness. But I think what we're going to see is probably get progressively more difficult as the tournament plays out here the next 3 days.
Given where it's located on the ocean and whatnot, there's a number of elements that go into that rather than a, you know, inland golf course. Do they have to be careful about how tough they can make it? Because Mother Nature might make it more difficult, extra steps.
Sure. Well, I think we saw that certainly a few years ago with Shantok Hills and what happened there. I think the USGA since then, there's been, obviously, there was quite a bit of outcry that week and in subsequent, you know, months afterwards. So I think the USGA has kind of softened a little bit in terms of the difficulty. Now, look, some of that has to do with the courses they've gone to. Pebble Beach is not a course back in 2019, a course that you would do much to. You know, the difficulty there is in the tiny greens. Of course, with Wingfoot, sort of a classic venue, and Bryson was really the only guy who was able to separate himself there. I think they're very cognizant of not letting the course get out of control. So I think we did see a little bit friendlier setup, slightly friendlier setup, sort of between what I would classify maybe as a difficult tour course setup week to week that we see on the PGA Tour and the typical U.S. Open. But again, I think as this plays out over the next 3 days, I think we'll see it get progressively more difficult. It'll be fascinating to see, come Sunday, what that place is like late Sunday afternoon.
Bryson DeChambeau, the defending champ, finished at 2-over. He said he was going to bomb it. That's his strategy going into it. Does Torrey Pines lend itself to that kind of strategy? Is that an advantage that he has, or is that just something he wants to do and will do it anywhere?
Well, yeah, he'll do it anywhere. I think we've seen that, and he put in a late rain session last night hitting under the lights, not surprisingly. But, look, it's a place where if you bomb it and get a bit offline, you can get in trouble. The Kikuyu Rough, is difficult. It's extremely difficult. And I think we've seen some, the rough at Torrey Pines seems to be, you can get some good lies in there, but you can also get some really nasty, difficult lies. And therein lies the challenge for Bryson, is that if he's going to hit it in the rough, he's there's a price to pay for that, and I think we saw that in the opening round.
Phil Mickelson's round of four over. I mean, again, there's a lot of hype, obviously, coming off the PGA. What did you make of the round? What did you make of his sort of demeanor leading into a week where there's a lot of pressure to win this, and there's even more pressure that it's a course he grew up on?
Yeah, I think certainly the expectations were high. The hype was high. But I think we have to remember that Phil is 51 years old. What happened at the PGA Championship, while it was nothing short of spectacular and impressive, that's the exception. I don't think that kind of performance at this point in Phil Mickelson's career is one we can expect. And frankly, you know, that's part of the appeal of him. You never know what you're going to get from Phil. He sometimes is going to play like he did at Kiowa, and sometimes he's going to play like he did in the opening round at Torrey. And as much as it's a hometown course for Phil, you know, we have to remember this is not a course he plays regularly. He plays it during the Farmers Insurance Open, but it's a much different golf course then. And he doesn't really spend any other time prepping there. And we even talked about that earlier this week where, you know, he did some prep the week prior to the tournament week, but really it's not a place, it's a public golf course, municipal golf course, not a place where he's going to spend really any time other than during the Farmers Week when it's a much, much different golf course.
Matthew Wolf took some time off. He's at one under. What was the reasoning behind that? What was the reasoning he gave for disappearing for a while?
Yeah, he just wasn't having fun. And actually, you know, wrote a piece for Golf Digest in the last round that we saw him prior to the U.S. Open, which was 2 months ago down in New Orleans, where he teamed up with Colin Morikawa, who really summed it up quite eloquently and essentially made the point that, you know, look, there are some things going on with him, be it on the course or off the course, and he clearly was struggling with that. Professional golf can be a lonely world, and this is a guy who is 22 years old, and despite all the riches and success he's already had at this point in his career, that doesn't always add up to happiness. We've seen in other sports. You can look at Naomi Osaka pulling out of Wimbledon, pulling out of the French. So not surprising, you know, comparison there. And I think he is just trying to find happiness at this point.
I'd like to elaborate a little bit on that, what you know of their grind and their daily sort of routine, because it, on the outside, it's easy to look and say, hey, these guys play the best courses in the world. Almost every tour stop is at a luxury resort spa somewhere where it's the best of the world. They're private jetting all over. Everything is free, all the gifts that they get. But what is it like to practice constantly, to find yourself in a swing slump and having to work through that? Does the grind really at 21 really wear? Can it really wear on you like that?
Well, I think that's the question, right? You know, look, we all see these guys on TV and playing tournaments in glamorous locations and all of the spoils that go with that, but professional golf behind the curtain can be a lonely world.
Yeah.
You know, it's your golf course, hotel, a lot of nights on the road by yourself. It's every man for himself out there, unlike college golf where you've got teammates to lean on and there's a real team atmosphere. Some guys adjust to it better than others. I can remember years ago Hunter Mahan telling me the sort of the difference between, you know, college golf or and once you turn pro is that it's a job. It becomes you know, and all the elements, good and bad, that go with that. And it can be tough for some players to adjust to that. And that seems to have been the case with Matt Wolf, a guy who usually jovial and upbeat and so forth, and who's been downright miserable at times on the golf course, and it shows. And I think, you know, we've seen this with some athletes. Again, you can look at Naomi Osaka and I think sometimes we forget that these guys and women and so forth are as incredible athletes as they are. They're still humans, and they still have struggles, just like the rest of us. You know, trying to manage that in the public eye is can be difficult for some. And I think that was the case with Matthew. He seems to be trying to just have fun again. And for whatever the reason, he wasn't enjoying the – you know, the pressures and the lonely existence that professional golf can sometimes be. And that seems to be the reason for the couple of months off. But, You know, and I thought it was fascinating, too. He did say, you know, one of the reasons he picked the U.S. Open to come back at was the fact that, you know, it's obviously a big tournament, and if you shot 78, really no one's going to notice because a lot of people are going to shoot 78 and struggle and so forth. And so that tells you that he's still dealing with this. This is still an ongoing thing, and he's trying to work his way back to just enjoying himself and having fun again.
Is that the difficult part about the U.S. Open is judging where a guy's game is at? Because if Jordan Spieth shoots a 78 at Harbortown, then you go, well, what's going on? But if he shoots it at the U.S. Open, it's like, well, what do you want him to do? The rough is as thick as your knees.
Yeah, look, you know, I think 78 in a U.S. Open typically, while again, this isn't, I would say, quite as difficult as a lot of U.S. Opens of years past would you know, certainly wouldn't jump off the page. That said, I think U.S. Opens typically expose your weaknesses. If you aren't playing well, you're going to shoot 82 as Alvaro Ortiz did, or an 80 as Thomas Aiken did, or some of the Webb Simpson a 79 yesterday. So I think that is typically what a U.S. Open is going to do, is going to expose whatever weaknesses or struggles you have in your game. You can't really save your round in a U.S. Open the way you can in other tournaments.
Brian, thank you so much for your insight into what we may be seeing this coming weekend. Thank you so much. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. Brian Wacker on a Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. All right, thoughts on round one of the U.S. Open, a couple of things that he said about Matthew Wolff, and then a personal note as I head into vacation this week when we come back on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour, Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. Yep, we are on the road to later tonight. Begin a week vacation down in Florida.
So if the family's sleeping and Christy Brinkley pulls alongside of you...
Yeah, I'm already warning my wife of Christy Brinkley. Even at her age, it's driving by.
Oh, you, come on.
Kidding me.
Ageless.
God, ageless. Ageless woman, Christy Brinkley. Amazing. That movie is still funny. That movie is still funny. Some of the sequels aren't so good, but
I still
Christmas
find,
Vacation is still good.
Yeah, I still find things that I'm laughing at now that I was like, God, why don't I remember this joke? Or am I just now seeing it for the first time?
When I was a kid and I saw it, well, I wasn't a kid, I was like a teenager saw it. When he's eating the sandwiches and she yells that the dog peed on the basket.
Yeah.
And he's eating it and dancing to Christy Brinkley. He spits it out. Hilarious. Puts the dog on, let the dog on the chain and drag the dog on the highway. Why would I laugh at that? But I did.
What's worse, that or, you know, tying your aunt to the roof of the car.
Imogene Coca passing away in the car.
Or just leaving her on the doorstep. Because you got to get to Wally World.
God, Randy Quaid. I don't know why they call this Hamburger Helper. It does just fine by itself. So hilarious. So hilarious.
The daughter stoned in the backseat.
Oh, I know. But I think it's a Wally World and it's closed.
But the absolute best line is when they're in that hotel and, you know, it's like, you believe me. You know, I was trying to rescue her, Russ. You believe me, right? He goes, you know, he does this whole thing and he's like, it's a great story, Dad. I think Mom will buy it.
It's still great. What a great flick. Thanks to Brian Wacker joining us. The situation with Matthew Wolff that he said he wrote about is really fascinating. Matthew Wolff is 21, 22 years old. Remember, he was the guy that was part of that golf tournament thing that they did during COVID. Remember, it was like Rory and Ricky Fowler. Matthew Wolff got invited to that. He's not finding golf fun anymore. And, you know, you think that they would have a blast. You think if you could get on tour and make it on tour and win an event or two like he has, where you're kind of established, you're not struggling, you know, you've made it financially and you've made it where you've got your tour card for a while, that you'd be thrilled. You'd be happy. You'd have a great life of perk living, right? Where everything is rolled out for you. But he was miserable. And it's an isolated world out there. It's kind of sad in a way. And it was just, it just goes to show you sometimes the perception that I think the public has is not always the perception in real life. One other personal note, because I use this show a lot for, you know, because I like to share things with the audience. And before the show today, I found out that my Uncle Terry had passed away. And I come from a big family. I have a lot of uncles and aunts. And to say somebody is the favorite uncle is a little misleading because I have a lot of favorite uncles. And I have a couple that I don't know anymore, but my Uncle Terry was one of the more important people in my life. When he was young, he lived with us for a bit, and he was always willing. My brother and I were close in age, and we were very competitive. He was always willing to play like football with us when we needed an all-time quarterback. He was always willing to play wiffle ball with us when we needed an all-time pitcher, and he was hysterical. He was as funny as you ever would want to be around somebody. I remember when my grandmother passed away in the early 90s and was very sad because she kind of passed a little bit before her time. And my Uncle Terry had the whole family in stitches with stories because that felt like that was a role that he played, and he played it really well. And when my grandfather had passed away, the last time I saw him in 2008, one of the first things we talked about was West Virginia hiring Bill Stewart to be the head coach and how upset he was that it was too soon to hire a guy that just came in as an interim basis and won the Fiesta Bowl. I loved talking sports with him. I spent my spring breaks sometimes down at his house playing golf and just hanging with him. I am going to miss him tremendously, even though I had not really talked to him in the last couple of years, and I regret that completely. Rest in peace, Uncle Terry. You were a very important person in my life. All right, I'm going to go on vacation. John Stashower filling in for me next week. Everybody, enjoy your weekend. I am Tony D, Ron Culver. This is Sports Map Radio.